This is Our Living Lands, and I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Nika Bartu-Smith covers Indigenous communities in the Pacific Northwest for Underscore News and ICT. Our Living Lands producer Daniel Spalding spoke with Bartu-Smith about her work and the impact of climate change on tribes in the region.
What trends are you seeing throughout the Pacific Northwest when it comes to how tribes are responding to climate change?
Yeah, the first thing that I think about when you ask that question is really the continued fights for salmon and other native fish populations such as lamprey and like tuam and koptu that we're really seeing all across the Pacific Northwest. I really think about, you know, Oregon and Washington and California and into Idaho, and how that's, I mean, that's been at the forefront for so many nations for a really long time. I also, one of the other things I think we're hearing more and more about is impacts to gathering seasons. When it comes to gathering, you know, first foods such as huckleberries and medicines, and how those seasons are really shifting because of the weather patterns that we're seeing. And so that what that means in terms of how and when people are able to go harvest.
And that kind of just leads up to my next question. If there are any particular stories from tribes here in the area that, you know, really stuck with you, if so, can you share an example?
Yeah, so one of the more recent stories I worked on back in December, January, was with the Confederated Tribes at the Colville Reservation. And they're doing some really important work when it comes to energy sovereignty. And so what they're doing is they're installing these microgrids across the reservation that really focus on solar, I think some wind as well, electric vehicle charging stations, and really kind of working on this. I mean, they see pretty regular blackouts and power outages. And so figuring out how to really kind of take a hold on that, create that energy sovereignty so that they're not dependent on the bigger grids. And in that, really focusing on sustainable and renewable energy sources.
And in your reporting, are you seeing any friction, or where are you seeing friction and cooperation between tribal governments and federal or state agencies when it comes to climate policy?
Yeah, this question immediately has me thinking about dam removal. I got to do a lot of reporting on the Klamath Dam removal down in the Klamath River Basin, which obviously is this pretty phenomenal example of cooperation between state and local and federal and tribes who are really leading and at the forefront of that work for decades. And, you know, we're already seeing salmon return. And then in terms of friction, again, thinking about dams, a story I worked on last week has to do with, there was the Historic Resilient Columbia River Basin initiative that was signed in 2023 by the Biden administration, which allocated over $1 billion of funding for energy development and salmon restoration and potential dam removal down the line to tribes in the Northwest. And Trump pulled out of that in June. And so that really sparked a return of some lawsuits that have been kind of in the works for decades of, you know, lawyers for conservation groups and state agencies and Native Nations really asking the federal government to change their dam operations on the Snake and Columbia Rivers to protect the salmon and steelhead species that are on the brink of extinction.
And how are tribes incorporating traditional ecological knowledge into modern climate planning, and are institutions really respecting that knowledge?
Yeah, honestly, this is an area I would love to do more reporting on. I think one of the first examples that comes to mind for me has to do with Portland State University. And I think about a year ago, they opened up a new science center, their Vanir Science Center, and their whole focus is on Indigenous, like the combination of Indigenous knowledge and Western science. And they really worked on opening this new building with, they designed it with BIPOC students and faculty and community members. They have a first foods lab, which I haven't heard of anything like that in the country. And so I think that that's a way in which they're really kind of working to put Indigenous knowledge at the forefront and acknowledge that, like, right, this has always been at the forefront and it's just been us who have been too far behind to pick up on that.
And are you seeing any young Indigenous leaders stepping into climate advocacy or science roles? Do you have any stories that, you know, highlight this next generation?
I got to attend Unity last year and the year before, and really so many of the conversations stemmed from young people across the region that were really advocating for our rivers, for our salmon, for the environment as a whole, and having these really strong conversations about, like, something needs to change now. And you know, we're on the brink of, I mean, we're in crisis when it comes to climate. And so listen to young people. And there's a lot of really important leadership that I continue to see emerging.
Tune in next week for more stories about how climate change affects tribal communities. I'm Antonia Gonzalez for Our Living Lands, a collaboration of Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, Native Public Media, and the Mountain West News Bureau.
Native Voice 1, the Native American Radio Network.